All that remained were memories of her. Her long, straight black hair, her shapely fingers on the keyboard, her smooth, white, graceful, yet strangely eloquent calves. Her playing of Franz Liszt's Le Mal de Paix, her wet pubic hair, her hard nipples. No, that wasn't even a memory. That was a... Tsukuru decided not to go there. Where to now? Tsukuru wondered as he leaned back against a streetlight. His watch showed it was just before 7. Some light remained in the sky, but the shop windows along the street were sparkling more by the minute, enticing those who wandered by. It was still early, and he had nothing in particular he needed to do. He didn't want to go home just yet. He didn't want to be alone in a quiet place. Tsukuru could go anywhere he liked, almost anywhere, but he couldn't think of any place to go. At a time like this, it would be nice if I could drink more, he thought. At this point, most men would find a bar and get drunk. But his body couldn't handle more than a fixed amount of alcohol. Liquor didn't give him deadened senses or a pleasant forgetfulness, just a splitting headache the next morning. So where should I go? There really was only one choice. He walked along the main street to Tokyo Station, passed through the Yasu entrance, and sat down on a bench on the Yamanote Line platform. He spent over an hour watching as, almost every minute, another line of green train cars pulled up to the platform, disembarking hordes of people, and hurriedly swallowing up countless more. His mind was a blank as he watched, absorbed in the scene. The view didn't soothe the pain in his heart, but the endless repetition enthralled him, as always, and at the very least, numbed his sense of time. Unceasing crowds of people arrived out of nowhere, automatically formed lines, boarded the trains in order, and were carried off somewhere. Tsukuru was moved by how many people actually existed in the world, and he was likewise moved by the sheer number of green train cars. It was surely a miracle, he thought, how so many people in so many railroad cars are systematically transported as if it were nothing. How all those people have places to go, places to return to. As the rush hour surge finally receded, Tsukuru Tazaki slowly got to his feet, boarded one of the cars, and went home. The pain was still there, but now he knew there was something he had to do. Chapter 10. At the end of May, Tsukuru took a long weekend and returned to his home in Nagoya for 3 days. His family was holding a Buddhist memorial service for his father, so it was a particularly good time for him to go back. Since his father's death, his oldest sister and her husband had been living with Tsukuru's mother in her spacious house. But Tsukuru's old room was as vacant as he had left it, so he stayed there. His bed, desk, and bookshelf were unchanged from his high school days, the bookshelf lined with old books, the drawers full of pens and notebooks he'd used as a boy. The memorial service took place on his first day back. It was held at a temple and followed by a meal with relatives, which gave him sufficient time to catch up with his family. The next day, he was totally free. Tsukuru decided to go see Ao first. It was a Sunday, when most businesses were usually closed, but not a new car dealership. Tsukuru had decided that, no matter which of his friends he saw, he would casually show up without an appointment. He wanted to get an honest response when they saw him again, without giving them a chance to mentally prepare themselves for his visit. If he wasn't able to meet with them when he showed up, or if they refused to see him, he'd just have to live with it. If it came to that, he'd figure out another approach. The Lexus showroom was in a quiet area near Nagoya Castle. Lexuses in a variety of colors were grandly lined up behind the wide glass show windows. Every kind of car from sports cars to SUVs. Once inside the showroom, the distinctive new car smell wafted toward him, a blend of new tires, plastic, and leather. Tsukuru walked over to speak with a young woman seated behind the reception desk. She wore her hair up in a neat bun, revealing a slim white neck. A vase of large pink and white dahlias graced her desk.
"I'd like to see Mr. Omi, please," he told her.
She flashed him a calm, self-possessed smile that perfectly matched the bright, immaculate showroom. Her lipstick was a natural shade, her teeth beautifully even.
"Mr. Omi? Of course, sir. And you would be..."
"Tazaki," he said.
"Mr. Tazaki. And would you have an appointment for today?"
He didn't correct her mispronunciation of his name, a common mistake. That would actually help.
"I'm afraid I don't."
"I see. If you would pardon me for a moment."
The woman pushed an extension button on her phone and waited for about 5 seconds, then spoke.
"Mr. Omi, a client named Mr. Tazaki is here to see you."
"Yes, that's correct. Mr. Tazaki."
He couldn't hear what the other party was saying, just her short, clipped replies. Finally, she said,
"Yes, sir. I will let him know."
She hung up the phone and looked at Tsukuru.
"Mr. Tazaki, I'm afraid Mr. Omi is busy at the moment and cannot get away. I'm very sorry, but could I ask you to wait? He said it shouldn't take 10 minutes.
Her way of speaking was smooth and well-trained, her use of Japanese honorifics flawless. She sounded truly apologetic at having to make him wait. Obviously, she had been very well-educated. Or maybe she was just naturally this kind of person.
"That's fine. I'm in no hurry," Tsukuru said.
She led him to a plush black leather sofa. Next to it was a huge decorative potted plant, and in the background, an Antonio Carlos Jobim tune played. Glossy Lexus catalogs lay on top of the narrow glass coffee table.
"Would you care for coffee or tea, or perhaps green tea?"
"A coffee would be nice," Tsukuru said.
As he leafed through the catalog for the latest Lexus sedans, she brought over the coffee in a cream-colored cup imprinted with the Lexus logo. He thanked her. The coffee was delicious. It had a fresh aroma and was the perfect temperature. Tsukuru was glad he had decided to wear a suit and nice leather shoes. He had no idea what people coming to buy a Lexus normally wore, but they might not have taken him seriously if he had been decked out in a polo shirt, jeans, and sneakers. Just before he left the house, he had suddenly changed his mind and put on a suit and tie. He was kept waiting for 15 minutes, during which time he learned the entire lineup of Lexus models. He discovered that Lexus didn't give their different models names, like Corolla or Crown, but instead used numbers to distinguish models, just like Mercedes-Benz and BMW, and Brahms Symphonies. A tall man finally appeared. He crossed the showroom into Kuru's direction. He was broad-shouldered and carried himself in a decisive manner, letting those around him know he was not about to waste any time getting from point A to point B. It was definitely Ao. Even seen from a distance, he looked nearly the same as he had in high school. He'd grown a little bigger, that was all. Like a house with an addition when the family grows. Tsukuru placed the catalogs back on the tabletop and rose from the sofa.
"I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. My name's Omi."
Ao stood in front of Tsukuru, giving a slight bow. The suit that encased his large frame was perfectly pressed, without a single wrinkle. A refined suit, a mix of blue and gray in a light fabric. Considering his size, it must have been made to order. A light gray shirt and dark gray necktie completed the outfit. Tsukuro recalled how Ao had looked in high school, and found it surprising to now see him so impeccably dressed. Ao's hair, though, was unchanged, a rugby player's buzz cut, and he was, as before, quite tan. Ao's expression changed slightly when he looked at Tsukuro. A slight doubt glinted in his eyes, as if he had seen something in Tsukuro's face he remembered, but couldn't quite recall what it was. He smiled, swallowing back what he was about to say, waiting for Tsukuro to speak.
"It's been a while," Tsukuro said.
As he heard Tsukuro's voice, the layer of doubt that had veiled Ao's face suddenly lifted. Tsukuro's voice hadn't changed at all.
"Tsukuro?"
he said, narrowing his eyes. Tsukuro nodded.
"I'm sorry to barge in on you at work like this, but I figured that was the best way."
Ao took a deep breath, his shoulders lifting, and then slowly breathed out. He looked at Tsukuru's whole body, as if inspecting him, his gaze running from top to bottom, then back to the top again.
"I can't believe how much you've changed," Ao said, sounding impressed. "If I'd passed you on the street, I wouldn't have recognized you."
"You haven't changed at all."
Ao's large mouth twisted to one side.
"No way. I've put on weight. Got a pot belly now, and I can't run fast anymore. Golf once a month with clients is about all I can manage."
They were silent for a moment.
"You didn't come here to buy a car, am I right?"
Ao asked, as if confirming it.
"You're right. I didn't come to buy a car. If you are free, I'd like to talk, just the two of us, even for a short time."
Ao gave a slight, unsure frown. His face always had given away his feelings ever since Tsukuro had first known him.
"I have a pretty tight schedule today. I have to go visit some customers, and then I have a meeting in the afternoon."
"Name a time that's convenient for you. I'm fine with whatever works for you. It's why I came back to Nagoya."
Ao mentally reviewed his schedule and glanced at the wall clock. It was 11:30. He rubbed the tip of his nose vigorously and then spoke, as if he'd made up his mind.
"Okay. I'll take a lunch break at 12. I could meet you for a half hour. If you go out here and turn left, you'll see a Starbucks down the street. I'll meet you there."
Ao showed up at the Starbucks at 5 to 12.
"It's too noisy here, so let's grab some drinks and go somewhere else," Ao said.
He ordered a cappuccino and a scone for himself. Tsukuro bought a bottle of mineral water. They walked to a nearby park and sat down on an unoccupied bench. The sky was covered with a thin layer of clouds, not a patch of blue visible anywhere, though it did not look like rain. There was no wind either. The branches of a nearby willow tree were laden with lush foliage and drooping heavily, almost to the ground, though they were still, as if lost in deep thought. Occasionally, a small bird landed unsteadily on a branch, but soon gave up and fluttered away. Like a distraught mind, the branch quivered slightly, then returned to stillness.
"I might get a call on my cell while we're talking," Ao said. "I hope you'll forgive me. I have a couple of business-related things I'm working on."
"No problem. I can imagine how busy you must be."
"Cell phones are so convenient that they're an inconvenience," Ao said. "So tell me, are you married?"
"No, still single."
"I got married 6 years ago and have a child, a 3-year-old boy. Another one's on the way, and my wife's getting bigger by the day. The due date's in September. A girl this time."
Tsukuro nodded.
"Life's moving along smoothly, then." "I don't know about smoothly, but it's moving along at least. There's no going back now, might be another way of putting it. How about you?"
"Not so bad," Tsukuro said,
taking a business card out of his wallet and passing it to Ao, who took it and read aloud.
Railroad Company. Facilities Department. Construction Division.
Mostly we build and maintain railroad stations, Tsukuru said.
You always liked stations, didn't you? Ao said, sounding impressed.
He took a sip of cappuccino.
So you got a job doing what you like.
But I work for a company, so I can't just do what I like. There are all kinds of boring things I have to do.
It's the same everywhere, Ao said. As long as you work for somebody, you have to put up with a lot of crap.
He shook his head a couple of times, as if remembering examples. So, are Lexuses selling well? Tsukuru asked.
Not bad. This is Nagoya, after all. Toyota's hometown. Toyotas practically sell themselves. But our competitors now aren't Nissan and Honda. We're targeting consumers who buy high-end imported cars, your Mercedes and your BMWs, trying to turn them into Lexus buyers. That's why Toyota's created a flagship brand. It might take time, but I'm sure it'll work out.
Losing is not an option. An odd look passed over Ao's face for a second, and then he grinned broadly.
Ah, my little rugby pep talk. You picked a strange thing to remember.
You were really good at boosting morale.
Yeah, but we lost most of the time. Business is actually going smoothly. The economy is still in bad shape, of course, but the rich managed to hold on to their money amazingly well.
Tsukuru nodded, and Ao continued.
I've driven a Lexus myself for quite a while. They're wonderful cars. Quiet, never need repairs. I took one out on a test course and got it up to 125 miles an hour. The steering wheel was stable, no vibration whatsoever. The brakes are solid, too. It's an amazing car. It's nice to be able to sell people something you believe in yourself. No matter how smooth-talking I might be, I could never sell something that I didn't actually like.
Tsukuru agreed. Ao looked him right in the eye.
I bet I sound like a car salesman.
No, I don't think so, Tsukuru said. He knew Ao was being honest about how he felt. Still, the fact remained that he had never talked like this back in high school.
Do you drive?
Ao asked. I do, but I don't have a car. In Tokyo, you can get by with trains, buses, and taxis. I get around by bike a lot. When I absolutely need a car, I rent one. It's different from Nagoya.
Yeah, that would be easier and cost less, Ao said.
He let out a small sigh.
People can get by without a car. So, how do you like living in Tokyo?
Well, my job's there, and I've lived there long enough to get used to it. I don't really have anywhere else to go. That's all. It's not like I'm that crazy about the place. They were silent for a while. A middle-aged woman with two border collies walked past, then a few joggers heading toward the castle.
You said there was something you wanted to talk about, Ao said,
as if addressing someone in the distance.
During summer vacation in my sophomore year in college, I came back to Nagoya and called you. Tsukuru began. You told me then that you didn't want to see me anymore, not to ever call again, and that the four of you felt the same way. Do you remember that?
Of course I do.
I want to know why, Tsukuru said.
Just like that? After all this time? Ao said, sounding a little surprised.
Yes, after all this time. I wasn't able to ask you back then. It was too unexpected, too much of a shock. And I was afraid to hear the reason you guys so flat out rejected me. I felt like if you told me, I'd never recover. So I tried to forget about all of it, without finding out what was going on. I thought time would heal the pain.
Ao tore off a small piece of scone and popped it in his mouth. He chewed it slowly, washing it down with the cappuccino. Tsukuru went on. 16 years have gone by, but it feels like the wound is still there inside me, like it's still bleeding. Something happened recently, something very significant to me that made me realize this. That's why I came to Nagoya to see you. I apologize for showing up out of the blue like this. Ao stared for a long time at the heavy, sagging branches of the willow.
You have no idea why we did that, he said finally.
I've thought about it for 16 years, but I have no clue. Ao narrowed his eyes, seemingly perplexed, and rubbed the tip of his nose, his habit, apparently, when he was thinking hard.
When I told you that back then, you said, I see, and hung up. You didn't object or anything. Or try to dig deeper. So naturally, I thought you knew why.
Words don't come out when you're hurt that deeply, Tsukuru said. Ao didn't respond. He tore off another piece of scone and tossed it towards some pigeons. The pigeons swiftly flocked around the food. He seemed to be used to doing this. Maybe he often came here on his break and shared his lunch with the birds.
Okay, so tell me, what was the reason? Tsukuru asked. You really don't have any idea? I really don't.
Just then, a cheery melody rang out on Ao's cell phone. He slipped the phone from his suit pocket, checked the name on the screen, impassively pressed a key, and returned it to his pocket. Tsukuru had heard that melody somewhere before, an old pop song of some kind, probably popular before he was born, but he couldn't recall the title.
If you have something you need to do, Tsukuru said, please, feel free to take care of it.
Ao shook his head.
No, it's okay. It's not that important. I can handle it later.
Tsukuru took a drink of mineral water from the plastic bottle. Why did I have to be banished from the group? Ao considered this for some time before he spoke.
If you're saying that you have no idea why, it means...
What?
That you didn't have any sexual relationship with Shiro?
Tsukuru's lips curled up in surprise.
A sexual relationship? No way. Shiro said you raped her, Ao said, as if reluctant to even say it. She said you forced her to have sex.
Tsukuru started to respond, but the words wouldn't come. Despite the water, the back of his throat felt so dry that it ached.
I couldn't believe you'd do something like that, Ao continued. I think the other two felt the same way, both Kuro and Aka. You weren't the type to force someone to do something they didn't want to do. You weren't violent, we knew that. But Shiro was totally serious about it, obsessed even. You had a public face and a hidden private face, she said. You had a dark, hidden side. Something unhinged and detached from the side of you that everyone knew. When she said that, there was nothing we could say.
Tsukuru bit his lip for a time. Did Shiro explain how I supposedly raped her?
She did. Very realistically, and in great detail. I didn't want to hear any of it. Frankly, it was painful to hear. Painful and sad. It hurt me, I guess I should say. Anyway, she got very emotional. Her body started trembling, and she was so enraged that she looked like a different person. According to Shiro, she traveled to Tokyo to see a concert by a famous foreign pianist, and you let her stay in your apartment in Jiugeoka. She told her parents she was staying in a hotel, but by staying with you, she saved money. Normally, she might have hesitated to stay alone in a man's place, but it was you, so she felt safe.
but she said that in the middle of the night you forced yourself on her. She tried to resist, but her body was numb and wouldn't move. You both had a drink before bedtime, and you might have slipped something into her glass. That's what she told us.
Tsukuru shook his head. Shiro never visited my place in Tokyo once, let alone stay over.
Ao shrugged his shoulders a touch. He made a face like he'd bitten into something bitter, and glanced off to one side.
The only thing I could do was believe what she said. She told us she had been a virgin, that you'd deflowered her by force, and it was painful and she'd bled. Shiro was always so shy and bashful, and I couldn't imagine a reason why she'd make up such a graphic story.
Tsukuru turned to look at Ao's profile.
Granted.
But why didn't you ask me? Shouldn't you have given me a chance to explain, instead of trying me in absentia like that?
Ao sighed.
You are absolutely right. In retrospect, yes. That's what we should have done. We should have listened to your side of the story. But at the time, we couldn't. It was impossible. Shiro was agitated and confused like you wouldn't believe. We had no idea what might happen. So our first priority was to calm her down. It wasn't like we believed every single thing she said. Some parts didn't add up. But we didn't think it was all fiction, either. It was so detailed what she told us that we figured there had to be some truth to it.
So you went ahead and cut me off.
You've got to understand, Tsukuru, that we were in shock ourselves, totally disoriented. We were hurt, too. We had no idea who to believe. In the midst of all this, Kuro stood by Shiro. She wanted us to cut you off, just like Shiro had asked. I'm not trying to excuse our actions, but Aka and I were sort of swept along, and we did what Kuro wanted.
Tsukuro sighed. Whether or not you believe me, I never raped Shiro, and never had a sexual relationship with her. I don't remember doing anything even close to that.
Ao nodded but didn't say anything.
Whatever he believed or didn't believe, too much time had passed since then. That's what Tsukuru figured, for the other three as well, and for Tsukuru himself.
Ao's cell phone rang again. He checked the name and turned to Tsukuru.
Sorry, but do you mind if I take this?
Go right ahead, Tsukuru said.
Ao stood up from the bench, walked a little ways away, and began talking into his cell phone. His body language and expression made clear that it was a customer. Tsukuru suddenly remembered the ringtone melody, Elvis Presley's Viva Las Vegas. No matter what sort of spin you put on it, it was not exactly the right ringtone for a shrewd Lexus salesman. Ever so slowly, Tsukuru felt reality drain from things around him.
Ao returned and sat back down on the bench.
Sorry about that, he said. I'm done.
Tsukuru looked at his watch. It was close to the end of the 30 minutes Ao said he could spare.
But why would Shiro claim such a ridiculous thing? Tsukuru asked. And why did it have to be me she accused? I couldn't say, Ao said.
He shook his head weakly a couple of times.
I'm sorry, but I can't help you. Back then, and even now, I'm totally in the dark about the whole thing.
Doubts about what was true and what he should believe had taken hold of Ao, and he was not the type of person who could handle being confused. He always worked best on a set field with set rules and a set team.
Kuro must know more, Ao said. I got that impression. Like there were details we weren't told about. You know what I mean? Women open up more to each other.
Kuro's living in Finland now, Tsukuru said.
I know. She sends me a postcard every once in a while, Ao said.
They fell silent again. A group of three high school girls in school uniforms were cutting across the park. The hems of their short skirts swished perkily, and they laughed loudly as they passed in front of the bench. The girls still looked like children, white socks and black loafers and innocent expressions. It gave Tsukuru a strange feeling to think that not so long ago, he and Ao and his friends were that age.
"You really look different now. You know that?" Ao said.
"Well, of course I've changed. You haven't seen me for 16 years.
"No, not just because it's been so long. At first, I didn't recognize you. When I took a good look, of course, I knew who you were. You look sort of, I don't know, gaunt and fearless-looking. You have these sunken cheeks, piercing eyes. Back then you had a rounder, softer kind of face."
Tsukuru couldn't tell him how a half-year spent obsessing over death, over destroying himself, had changed him, how those days had permanently transformed the person he was. He had the feeling he couldn't get across even half the despair he'd felt at the time. It was probably better not to bring it up at all. Tsukuru was silent, waiting for Ao to continue.
"In our group, you were always the handsome one. The boy who made a good impression. Clean, neat, well-dressed and polite. You always made sure to greet people nicely, and never said anything stupid. You didn't smoke, hardly touched alcohol, were always on time. Did you know that all our mothers were big fans of yours?"
"Your mothers?" Tsukuru said in surprise.
He hardly remembered a thing about their mothers.
"And I've never been handsome, not then or now. I've got this kind of blah look."
Ao shrugged his wide shoulders a touch.
"Well, at least in our group you were the best looking. My face has personality, I suppose. The personality of a gorilla. And Aka is the stereotypical nerd with glasses. What I'm trying to say is, we all took on our different roles pretty well, while the group lasted, I mean."
"We consciously played those roles?"
"No, I don't think we were that aware of it," Ao replied. "But we did sense which position each of us played. I was the happy-go-lucky jock, Aka the brilliant intellectual, Shiro the sweet young girl, Kuro the quick-witted comedian, and you were the well-mannered handsome boy."
Tsukuru considered this. "I've always seen myself as an empty person, lacking color and identity. Maybe that was my role in the group, to be empty."
Ao shot him a baffled look.
"I don't get it. What role would being empty play?"
"An empty vessel, a colorless background, with no special defects, nothing outstanding. Maybe that sort of person was necessary to the group."
Ao shook his head.
"You weren't empty. Nobody ever thought that. You, how should I put it, helped the rest of us relax."
"Helped you relax?" Tsukuru repeated, surprised. "Like elevator music, you mean?"
"No, not like that. It's hard to explain. But having you there, we could be ourselves. You didn't say much, but you had your feet solidly planted on the ground. And that gave the group a sense of security, like an anchor. We saw that more clearly when you weren't with us anymore. How much we really needed you. I don't know if that's the reason, but after you left, we all sort of went our separate ways."
Tsukuru remained silent, unable to find the right reply.
"You know, in a sense, we were a perfect combination, the five of us. Like five fingers."
Ao raised his right hand and spread his thick fingers.
"I still think that. The five of us all naturally made up for what was lacking in the others, and totally shared our better qualities. I doubt that sort of thing will ever happen again in our lives. It was a one-time occurrence. I have my own family now, and of course I love them. But truthfully, I don't have the same spontaneous, pure feeling for them that I had for all of you back then.
Tsukuru was silent. Ao crushed the empty paper bag into a ball and rolled it around in his large hand.
Tsukuru, I believe you, Ao said, that you didn't do anything to Shiro. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. You'd never have done something like that.
As Tsukuru was wondering how to respond, Viva Las Vegas blared out on Ao's cell phone again. He checked the caller's name and stuffed the phone back in his pocket.
I'm sorry, but I really need to get back to the office, back to hustling cars. Would you mind walking with me to the dealership?
They walked down the street side by side, not speaking for a while. Tsukuru was the first to break the silence.
Tell me, why Viva Las Vegas as your ringtone?
Ao chuckled.
Have you seen that movie?
A long time ago, on late-night TV. I didn't watch the whole thing.
Kind of a silly movie, wasn't it?
Tsukuru gave a neutral smile.
3 years ago, I was invited, as the top salesman in Japan, to attend a conference in Las Vegas for U.S. Lexus dealers. More of a reward for my performance than a real conference. After meetings in the morning, it was gambling and drinking the rest of the day. Viva Las Vegas was like the city's theme song. You heard it everywhere you went. When I hit it big at roulette, too, it was playing in the background. Since then, that song's been my lucky charm.
Makes sense.
And the song's been surprisingly helpful in my business. Older customers are happy when we're talking, and they hear that ringtone. You're still so young, they ask. So why do you like that old song? Kind of an icebreaker, I guess. Viva Las Vegas isn't one of Elvis's legendary songs, of course. There are songs that are a lot more famous. But there's something about it, something unexpected that gets people to open up. They can't help but smile. I don't know why, but there it is. Have you ever been to Las Vegas?
No, never been, Tsukuru said.
I've never been abroad, even once.
But I'm thinking of going to Finland sometime soon.
Ao looked taken aback. As he walked along, he kept his eyes fixed on Tsukuru.
Yeah, that might be nice. If I could, I'd like to go too. I haven't spoken with Kuro since her wedding. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I used to like her.
Ao turned to face forward and took a few steps.
But I've got 1.5 kids now and a busy job. A mortgage and a dog I have to walk every day. I can't see myself getting away to Finland. But if you see Kuro, tell her hello from me.
I will, Tsukuru said. Before I do that, though, I'm thinking of going to see Aka.
Ah, Ao said.
An ambiguous look came over his face. His facial muscles twitched in an odd way.
I haven't seen him lately.
How come?
Do you know what kind of work he's doing now?
Sort of, Tsukuru replied.
I guess I shouldn't be going into it here. I don't want to bias you before you see him. All I can say is that I'm not too fond of what he's doing, which is partly why I don't see him very often, unfortunately.
Tsukuru was silent, keeping pace with Ao's long strides.
It's not like I have doubts about him as a person. I have doubts about what he does. There's a difference.
Ao sounded like he was convincing himself.
Maybe doubts is the wrong word. I just don't feel comfortable with his way of thinking. Anyway, he's become pretty famous in this town. He's been on TV, in newspapers and magazines, as a real wheeler-dealer entrepreneur. He was featured in a women's magazine as one of the most successful bachelors in their 30s.
Most successful bachelors? Tsukuru said.
I never saw that coming, Aro said. I would never have imagined him appearing in a women's magazine.
Tell me, how did Shiro die? Tsukuro said, changing the subject.
Aro came to an abrupt halt in the middle of the street. He stood stock still, like a statue. The people walking behind him nearly crashed into him. He stared straight at Tsukuro.
Hold on a second. You honestly don't know how she died?
How should I? Until last week, I didn't even know she was dead. Nobody told me.
Don't you ever read the newspaper?
Sure, but I didn't see anything about it. I don't know what happened, but I'm guessing the Tokyo papers didn't give it much coverage.
Your family didn't know anything?
Tsukuro shook his head. Aho, seemingly unnerved, faced forward again and resumed his quick pace. Tsukuro kept up with him. A moment later, Aho spoke.
After Shiro graduated from music college, she taught piano for a while from her house. She moved out, finally, to Hamamatsu and was living alone. About 2 years later, she was found strangled to death in her apartment. Her mother had been worried because she hadn't been able to reach Shiro. Her mother was the one who found her. She still hasn't recovered from the shock, and they still haven't arrested anyone.
Tsukuro gasped. Strangled? Aho went on.
Shiro's body was discovered 6 years ago on May 12th. By then we really got in touch with each other, so I don't know what sort of life she led in Hamamatsu. I don't even know why she moved there. When her mother found her, Shiro had already been dead for 3 days. She'd been lying on the kitchen floor for 3 days. I went to the funeral in Nagoya, Aho continued, and I couldn't stop crying. I felt like a part of me had died, like I'd turned to stone. But like I said, by this time our group had pretty much split up. We were all adults, with different lives, so there really wasn't much we could do about it. We weren't naive high school students anymore. Still, it was sad to see what used to be so fundamental to our lives fade away and disappear. We'd gone through such an exciting time together and grown up together.
When he inhaled, Tsukuro felt like his lungs were on fire. His tongue felt swollen, as if it were blocking his mouth. Viva Las Vegas rang out again on the cell phone, but Aho ignored it and kept walking. That out-of-place, cheery melody kept playing from his pocket, then stopped. When they reached the entrance to the Lexus showroom, Aho held out a large hand to shake with Tsukuro. Aho had a strong grip.
I'm glad I could see you, he said,
looking Tsukuro in the eye, looking people right in the eye when he talked, giving them a good, firm handshake. This hadn't changed.
I'm sorry to have bothered you when you're so busy, Tsukuro finally managed to say.
No problem. I'd like to see you again when I have more time. I feel like there's so much more we should talk about. Make sure you get in touch the next time you're in Nagoya.
I will. I'm sure we'll see each other again before too long, Tsukuro said.
Oh, one more thing. Do you remember a piano piece that Shiro used to play a lot? A quiet 5 or 6 minute piece by Franz Liszt called the Madope? Aho thought for a minute and shook his head.
If I heard the melody, maybe I'd remember. I can't tell from the title. I don't know much about classical music. Why do you ask?
I just happened to recall it, Tsukuro said. One last question. What in the world does the word Lexus mean?
Aho laughed. People ask that a lot,
Actually, it doesn't mean anything. It's a made-up word. An ad agency in New York came up with it at Toyota's request. It sounds high class, expressive, and has a nice ring to it. What a strange world we live in. Some people plug away at building railroad stations, while others make tons of money cooking up sophisticated-sounding words.
Industrial refinement is the term for it. A trend of the times, Tsukuru said.
Ao grinned broadly. Let's make sure neither of us gets left behind.
They said goodbye. Ao went into the showroom, tugging his cell phone out as he strode inside. This might be the last time I ever see him, Tsukuru thought as he waited for the signal to change at the crosswalk. A 30-minute meeting after 16 years was, arguably, too short a time for such old friends to fully catch up. Surely there was much more that they hadn't had time to talk about. Still, Tsukuru felt as if they had covered everything important that needed to be said. Tsukuru grabbed a taxi, went to the local library, and requested the bound editions of newspapers from 6 years ago. Chapter 11. The next morning, a Monday, at 10:30, Tsukuru visited Aka's office. The company was located about 5 kilometers from the Lexus showroom in a modern, glass-enclosed commercial building, where it occupied half of the 8th floor. The other half was taken up by the offices of a well-known German pharmaceutical company. Tsukuru wore the same suit as on the previous day, and the blue tie Sara had given him. At the entrance was a huge, smartly designed logo that announced Beyond. The office was clean, open, and bright. On the wall behind the reception desk hung a large abstract painting, a splash of primary colors. What it was supposed to be was unclear, though it was not terribly puzzling. Aside from that one painting, the office was devoid of decorations. No flowers, no vases. From the entrance alone, it was hard to know what sort of business the company was in. At the reception desk, he was greeted by a young woman in her early 20s, with hair perfectly curled at the ends. She had on a light blue short-sleeved dress and a pearl brooch, the sort of healthy girl lovingly raised in a well-off, optimistic sort of family. She took Tsukuru's business card, her whole face lighting up in a smile, then pushed an extension number on her phone as if pressing the soft nose of an oversized dog. A short while later, the inner door opened, and a sturdy-looking woman in her mid-40s emerged. Dressed in a dark suit with wide shoulders and thick-heeled black pumps. Her features were oddly flawless. Her hair was cut short, her jaw firm, and she looked extremely competent. There are certain middle-aged women who look like they are outstanding at whatever they do, and this woman was one of them. If she were an actress, she would play a veteran chief nurse or the madam of an exclusive escort service. She looked at the business card Tsukuru proffered, a hint of doubt crossing her face. What possible business could the deputy section chief of the construction section of the facilities department of a Tokyo-based railroad company have with the CEO of a creative business seminar company in Nagoya? Not to mention showing up without an appointment. But she did not question him about his reasons for visiting.
I'm sorry, but I wonder if I could have you wait here for a little while, she said,
mustering the barest minimalist smile. She motioned Tsukuru to take a seat and then vanished through the same door. The chair was a simple Scandinavian design of chrome and white leather. Beautiful, clean, and silent, with not an ounce of warmth, like a fine rain falling under the midnight sun. Tsukuru sat down and waited. The young woman at the reception desk was busy with some sort of task on her laptop. She glanced in his direction from time to time, shooting him an encouraging smile. Like the woman at the Lexus dealership, she was a type Tsukuru often saw in Nagoya. Beautiful features, always immaculately dressed, the kind of woman that makes a great impression. Their hair is always nicely curled. They major in French literature at expensive private women's colleges, and after graduation find jobs as receptionists or secretaries. They work for a few years, visit Paris for shopping once a year with their girlfriends. They finally catch the eye of a promising young man in the company, or else are formally introduced to one, and quit work to get married. They then devote themselves to getting their children into famous private schools. As he sat there, Tsukuru pondered the kind of lives they led. In 5 minutes, the middle-aged secretary returned and led him to Aka's office. Her smile had ratcheted up a notch. Tsukuru could detect a certain respect for someone like him who showed up without an appointment and actually got to see her boss. It had to be a rare occurrence. She led him down the hallway with long strides, heels clicking hard and precise, like the sounds a faithful blacksmith makes early in the morning. Along the corridor were several doors with thick, opaque glass, but Tsukuru could hear no voices or sounds from the rooms beyond. Compared to his workplace, with its incessantly ringing phones, doors constantly banging open and shut, people yelling, this was a whole other world. Aka's office was surprisingly small and cozy, considering the scale of the company. Inside was a desk, also a Scandinavian design, a small sofa set, and a wooden cabinet. On top of the desk were a sort of objet d'art, stainless steel desk light, and a Mac laptop. B&O audio components were set above the cabinet, and another large abstract painting that made copious use of primary colors hung on the wall. It looked like it was by the same artist. The window in the office was big and faced the main street, but none of the sound from outside filtered in. Early summer sunlight fell on the plain carpet on the floor, gentle, subdued sunlight. The room was simple, with a uniform design and nothing extraneous. Each piece of furniture and equipment was clearly high-end, but unlike the Lexus showroom, which went out of its way to advertise luxury, everything here was designed to be low-key and unobtrusive. Expensive anonymity was the basic concept. Aka stood up from behind his desk. He had changed a lot from when he was 20. He was still short, not quite 5'3", but his hair had receded considerably. He had always had thinnish hair, but now it had become even sparser, his forehead more prominent, as was the shape of his head. As if to compensate for the hair loss, he now had a full beard. Compared to his thin hair, his beard was dark black, the contrast quite striking. His metal-framed glasses, narrow and wide, looked good on his long, oval face. His body was as thin as before, without an ounce of extra weight. He had on a white shirt with narrow pinstripes and a brown knit tie. His sleeves were rolled up to the elbows. He wore cream-colored chinos and soft brown leather loafers with no socks. The whole outfit hinted at a casual, free lifestyle.
"I'm sorry to barge in on you like this in the morning," Tsukuru said. "I was afraid if I didn't, you might not see me."
"No way," Aka said. He held out his hand and shook Tsukuru's. Unlike Aho's, his hand was small and soft, his grip gentle. It was not a perfunctory handshake, though, but full of warmth.
"How could I ever say no? I'm happy to see you any time."
"But you're pretty busy, I imagine."
"Work keeps me busy for sure, but this is my company, and I make the ultimate decisions. My schedule can be pretty flexible if I want it to be. I can take more time with some things or shorten others. In the end, obviously, the accounts have to balance, and I can't change the ultimate amount of time we get, of course. Only God can do that. But I can make some partial adjustments."
"If it's okay with you, I'd like to talk about some personal things, Tsukuru said. But if you're busy right now, I can come back whenever it's convenient.
Don't worry about the time. You've come all this way. We can take our time and talk here, right now.
Tsukuru sat down on the two-person black leather sofa, and Aka sat on the facing chair. Between them was a small oval table with a heavy-looking glass ashtray. Aka picked up Tsukuru's business card again and studied it. His eyes narrowed.
I see. So Tsukuru Tazaki's dream of building railroad stations came true.
I'd like to say that's true, but unfortunately I don't get many opportunities to actually construct a new station, Tsukuru said. They rarely build new train lines in Tokyo, so most of the time we rebuild and refurbish existing stations, making them barrier-free, creating more multifunction restrooms, constructing safety fences, building more shops within the stations, coordinating things so other rail lines can share the tracks. The social function of stations is changing, so they keep us pretty busy.
But still, your job has something to do with railway stations.
True.
Are you married?
No, I'm still single. Aka crossed his legs and brushed away a thread on the cuff of his chinos.
I was married once, when I was 27. But I got divorced after a year and a half. I've been alone ever since. It's easier being single. You don't waste a lot of time.
Are you the same way?
No, not really. I'd like to get married. I actually have too much spare time on my hands. I've just never met the right person.
Tsukuru thought of Sara. If it were her, maybe he would feel like marrying. But they both needed to know more about each other first. Both of them needed a little more time.
Your business seems to be doing well, Tsukuru said, glancing around the tidy office.
Back when they were teenagers, Ao, Aka, and Tsukuru had used the rough masculine pronouns ore and omai, I and you, when they talked to each other. But Tsukuru realized now, seeing them 16 years later, that this form of address no longer felt right. Ao and Aka still called him omai, and referred to themselves as ore. But this casual way of speaking no longer came so easily to Tsukuru.
Yes, business is going well at the moment, Aka said.
He cleared his throat.
You know what we do here.
Pretty much, if what's online is accurate. Aka laughed.
It's not lies. That's what we do. The most important part, of course, is all in here.
Aka tapped his temple.
Like with a chef, the most critical ingredient isn't in the recipe.
The way I understand it, what you mainly do is educate and train human resources for companies.
Exactly. We educate new employees and re-educate mid-level employees. We offer that service to other companies. We create programs tailored to the client's wishes and carry them out efficiently and professionally. It saves companies time and effort.
Outsourcing employee education.
Correct. The business all started with an idea I had. You know, like in a comic book, where a light bulb goes off over the character's head. Startup funding came from the president of a consumer finance company who believed in me and fronted me the money. It just happened that's where the original funds came from.
So how did you come up with the idea? Aka laughed.
It's not all that exciting a story. After I graduated from college, I worked in a large bank. But the job was boring. The people above me were incompetent. They only thought about what was right in front of them. Never thought long term, and only cared about covering their asses. I figured if a top bank was like this, then Japan's future looked pretty bleak. I put up with it for 3 years, but nothing improved. If anything, it got worse. So I switched jobs and went to work for a consumer finance company. The president of the company liked me a lot and asked me to work for him.
In a job like that, you have much more freedom to maneuver, and the work itself was interesting. But there, too, my opinion